so much to me. All of you have like been a part of my life. My life has not been perfect. It's been pretty crazy. Like, I'm 6 years sober. I've probably lived more life in these past 6 years. Like, I was engaged for 36 hours. I had a new job. Like, it's been really full. Realistically, like when I was drinking, I was holed up alone. The steps have like given me a bridge to life. Like literally I had nothing to grieve because I was like alone in my apartment drinking, you know, like again, the steps have given me a format for living, a way to cope. How much time do I have left? Oh, great. a way to cope with what's happening. Like that was the thing, like I couldn't cope with anything. Going through the steps for the first time, like I reluctantly got a sponsor. I was too afraid, so I asked somebody who went to detox with me, and she paired me up with my first sponsor. And she brought me through the steps, and I like reluctantly went through them. And you know, I went through my fourth step, and I was so desperate that I was just like, it was like word vomit. I was like, I don't know this lady. I could ghost her if I want. So she said things to me like, what do you have to lose except being happy? And so I did it, you know. I got to like, through, you know, I got to my 10th step. And I started writing out inventory regularly. And for those of you that know me, when I came in, I was really angry. Like, I wouldn't say I had RBF, but I was like really unapproachable, you know? And yeah, like doing the 10th step and like doing inventory and stuff like that. When I first started to like, I remember starting to like look at my resentments on a daily basis. And she'd be like, okay, start with your first resentment of the morning. And I'd be like, well, I opened my eyes. And the Starbucks lady is slow. And the person was walking on the left side of the street, like literally every single move of the day. Like I really had a hard time just like happily moving through the world. And I noticed as I started to do more work, I got lighter, I got happier. I got more connected to my fellows. And again, it's like given me a bridge to life that's not perfect. But yeah, I love it. So thank you.
Thank you, Megan. We will now observe the seventh tradition. The seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. We are passing the basket, but you may also observe the seventh tradition digitally on Venmo. There is a QR code in the basket, and our Venmo handle is @beacon-group. Although there are no dues or fees for AA membership, we do have expenses. Our rent is $200 per month. Please give what you can, and see our treasurer, Ramiro, with any questions. We thank you for your generosity. AA also has a set of traditions which apply to the group in the same manner that the 12 steps apply to the individual. Tonight, Nate has been asked to read the 12 traditions.
Hi, Nate, Adam.
Hey, Nate.
1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on AA unity. 2, for our group purposes, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants, they do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting the groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, or prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Each AA group ought to be fully self-supported, declining outside contributions. 8. Alcoholics Anonymous shall remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. AA, as such, ought never to be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation on all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities.
Thank you. The Beacon Group is run by a business meeting which meets on the third Wednesday of each month directly after the meeting, in person and online. This is your opportunity to get more involved. All group members are encouraged to attend and participate. We hope you can join us. Will all group members please raise their hands? And now let's welcome our second 10-minute speaker, Steve.
I said bracket date is August 24th, 2014. It's great to see like really familiar faces. I moved out to Framingham, and it's been a while since I've hit some Boston meetings, so it's great to be here. I'm happy that Joe asked me to speak, even though I'm not Steve. I got sober in a way that I quite can't explain. I knew I had hurt a lot of family members. I knew I was desperately in the bottom. I knew mentally, physically, emotionally, I needed help. I knew that I didn't know how many more chances I had. I knew my mother's heart was completely broken. I knew a lot of these things before too, and I don't really know what brought me to Arbor Hospital to seek this partial hospitalization program, but for whatever reason that ended up there, I'm very, very grateful. I for the first time was able to not just think that my issues were mental, that somebody had convinced me that my drinking almost half-handled whiskey a day was a problem, you know. And I fought to keep that a part of my life. I fought to keep that in my heart, to think that it was never a problem, that it was okay, that the things that I was doing, that those were the way that some people live, and it was okay to drink that much and do what I was doing. And you know, I grew up with everything that I could have been needed and asked for, and I had great parents, I had great friends. I knew from the get-go that I just had never felt right. I had learning disabilities, and you know, I was always in classes that needed extra help, and you know, things were a little tougher for me, but I had a good life. And when I discovered my first drink, I loved, loved, and loved that feeling where I saw alcohol every weekend. And I planned for it from starting that Monday. And I would keep it in my trunk, or I would keep it in my backpack, and I would get coworkers to buy it for me. I would have my brother get it for me. I would do whatever I needed to do. I went to college with 5 handles of Bacardi Limon, you know, because I wasn't sure how I would get that, you know. That was the chaos that I lived, you know. I went on through this like fake persona, and it I tried to be a better person around people that I thought would see it like my parents and friends and whoever. So I tried to, or at least I thought I hid a lot of it, you know? And I thought I was smart. I thought I could just, if I wasn't in plain view of people where I was drinking, that, you know, doing it in isolation, doing it behind the scenes, or, you know, I had an off-campus college apartment. I had a dorm room that my parents paid for. So I had two places that I would go. I thought if I could do things, my mind was chaotic, you know? But I needed to have that in my life. But that was the one relationship that I was doing, you know, for the longest successfully. You know, I could never hold other relationships without having issues, you know, or drama, or problems, or fights, or whatnot. So I'm grateful that at Arbor Hospital I was able to get the courage, get over the fact that this was a God program, because that was what I thought it was, and to enter into the rooms of AA, and to keep going back to that partial hospitalization program, because that's where I went every morning and got myself held accountable. But what I did was I took the food, the lunches that were extra that for the people that didn't show up, and I went to AA meetings, and I had ham sandwiches, turkey sandwiches, cookies, juice, like chips, the works, you know? It was like wonderful, you know what I mean? Like, I continued to go, and I fell in love with AA. It's a strange feeling, but for like the first couple months, the halls of AA were like my sponsor. I then got a sponsor who relapsed on me. So I felt really broken in 2015. We had unbelievable snowstorms, and I was struggling to find meetings at some weeks, because I remember trekking to CYP. Trekking. Like, the trains reopened, but the church was still closed. I mean, churches were closed. You know, we didn't have Zoom. We didn't have things like that at that, like during that year, you know? And for me, it doesn't matter how you do AA, as long as you follow the steps. Because the meetings became my sponsor until I found a new sponsor. I've done the steps 3 times, found new, different ways to do them with people. I found comfort in just following the simple way that this program has been laid out to me in many different ways by, you know, more than one sponsor. But I've related to it, you know? I've helped people that needed it in different ways how I sponsor them, you know? Having those relationships and building those friendships has helped me become a much better person than I was. You know, just over 9 years of sobriety, and I feel like the past couple years has really been when my life has been complete, because I've truly given a lot to sobriety. And, you know, like, moving and buying a condo and getting married and, you know, having the courage to do things and face new challenges has been wonderful. And I've been able to do that sober, where I think before I wouldn't have had the courage or the strength to be, you know, to be a person that did that without having the insecurities. But what I did, you know, every day was I would pray. I would work the steps. I would do the reading. I would go to meetings. You know, I'd reach my hand out. I joined YPOC committees. I got involved in service in a lot of different ways. You know, in sobriety, around 2.5 years, I actually was a little suicidal. And Iggy Pot had saved me and took me and gave me a support system and brought me back to reality. So you can become depressed and sad and upset, but don't leave the halls. Don't leave the meetings that you're going to, you know? Stay where you're at. Because I stayed, and I didn't kill myself. I didn't do anything crazy. I didn't relapse. And there were times I wanted to, you know? And sometimes there were times I couldn't understand why the people were leaving either, and I was happy as can be. But I, for me, found such happiness in these halls, but you know, now I have a sponsor that has done so much for me with my new life that's been circling around me out in the suburbs, I call it, you know, and that's been different than when I was attending a lot of Boston meetings. But it didn't make those other sponsors less significant. I learned so much from having them be a part of my life. And, you know, if I continue to show up and do what I need to do on a daily basis, I know that what's been proven to me, I know that things will be okay. They don't always have to be wonderful. I might wake up really angry, but this program has always been, you know, one of the strong points to my success of staying, you know, alive, staying present, being a part of my family, and being a part of this community. Just to see faces that I haven't seen in a while, it's like so beautiful to know that you're still coming back and that you're still here, because this is not easy. Sobriety, you know, it's one thing I'm very grateful that I have this fellowship to be around me, because this isn't around for most normal folks, but I'm grateful and blessed to be in rooms like this and be able to ask to share my story. And I hope any of you get gathered something from it. Because it's been a long day, so I'm tired, so I apologize if I won't ramble, but I do appreciate you all and hope you have a great night, and thanks to our first speaker.
Thank you, Robert. We encourage all attendees to participate fully in our meetings and to have a service position. If you would like to be of service, please see our jobs coordinator, Ramiro. And now let's welcome our main speaker, Laura.
So congrats to you all for being here, and it's almost over. So I have a sobriety date. It's October 1st, 2012. That means 11 years, and I got 11 years on October 1st. So last year I spoke here when I turned 10 at like the same time of year with Megan. I thought there was a real conspiracy happening, but Sarah said there wasn't. I don't know if I believe that. But I like this room. It's a good day. I'm grateful I'm sober. I like the concept of the steps are a bridge back to life that Megan was talking about, because life is just so much bigger than the steps. They are truly like a bridge. And they are not just a bridge, but they are, you know, a way of life, and like truly a way of life. Like today, I apologized to a coworker
I didn't make like a real amends, but it's a way of life. Like I was a total psycho. I'm not trying not to swear this year. Last year I did a lot of swearing. I apologized to her because I was not nice. But it took me 2 weeks to do that. But it's progress, not perfection. And AA gives me the tools to learn how to apologize. You know, I was never somebody that knew how to do that, or that it doesn't matter if they apologize back, or if they, you know, and to see each person as in pain, you know, because I learned about this girl at work, and I'm totally on an off subject right now, but I learned about this girl at work who everyone thought was a little rough, you know, and I went and started bringing her Starbucks. I bought her a couple things. And because I had this sponsor at the time who wanted me to take like action, like an action of service, and that's kind of hard to do, you know? So like each day, like actually do an action, and it's really hard to think of things, but I brought her like Starbucks, and I learned that she had lost her sister in a car accident, and she's just a normie. But my point is, I don't think I have a point, but that AA like shows me how to live in the real world, and that the people around me are suffering, how to treat them. AA has taught me literally everything, absolutely everything. Big book and sponsorship and meetings. So about my story, I am an alcoholic and I didn't know that. I also grew up in, I also come from a line of alcoholism on both sides of my family. I definitely didn't know that. I wasn't somebody who knew that. I learned a lot of things getting sober that made sense. Because oftentimes we're like, oh, they died from this disease. It's like, did they? Did they die from that disease? Or was it alcoholism? Okay. But there was a lot of delusion. I'm the only person I know of in my family in AA or who's ever gone to AA. And so that's pretty cool in the way of AA is like new. You know, it really is new. It's less than 100 years old. And I'm grateful that I have this program. And truly, my story is one of enormous grace. I don't deserve this. I don't deserve sobriety. I often get frustrated and sad at others who can't get sober, and I don't know why I'm sober. You know, I don't have the exact math to make someone else sober, but it's truly grace. So I grew up in New Hampshire, and I also was kind of like a serious kid, and I got held back from kindergarten. I was like too shy or something, and sorry, I'm losing track. Okay, where do I go from here? I don't want to go too far. So I was uncomfortable, but I don't know what's normal and what's not normal, honestly. But I'll just talk about, like, I started smoking weed first. I think that's pretty normal. It's the gateway drug. That was kind of like what was taught to me in like school, middle school, and high school. This is the gateway drug, but it kind of turned out to be. Oh my god, it's so funny. So I loved like highs, you know, the highs of life, you know, like sneaking out, getting in trouble, ding dong ditch. I still have like enormous guilt about like I did this ding dong ditch one time. This woman was pregnant, like really big pregnant, and like came to the door and called my parents and whatever. But I got like such a I own amends there. So I started with the smoking weed, but in high school, the drinking really like took off and things turned I started to be like things started to turn where I was hanging out with different people. Like it wasn't the good people anymore. It was the people who wanted to get in trouble. And my drinking wasn't the same as other people from the beginning. I drank faster and more and blacked out, and I just didn't know any of that was alcoholism. I didn't know about the allergy. I just have a very vivid memory of all of my high school friends going to my family's lake house, and we always had a way to get alcohol. We had beer, and my friend and I, who's also an alky, we hid a bunch of beer so we had enough. And I did those type of behaviors that I didn't know wasn't normal. And I got in a huge fight in a blackout with them all because I was hiding the alcohol from them. And those are like the signs of like my drinking was different. Those are like the very minor signs. But so I started to have like rapid consequences from my drinking pretty, right away. I was arrested many times, like innocently, I guess. I mean, not innocently. I don't know what I'm saying. I'd be like at a party underage, and I'd be running away from the party and like get tackled or something. We had like a lot of like house parties in New Hampshire. And I was known in high school for jumping out of the window, running from the cops. But yeah, it was just like stupid high school stuff. But I had a lot of like consequences right away. And some were like really fun and some were really sad. Like some were like, I was really, I didn't know who I was gonna be when you put alcohol in me. I think that's one of the traits of having this disease, but because I've seen a lot of people who don't have this disease drink and their personality doesn't change at all, but I didn't know what would happen, and sometimes I would be really, really mean drunk, and or I would be a lot of different things, but some were fun stuff and some were really bad, and I got in a lot of bad situations. And a lot of bad things happened when I was drinking, but alcohol was running the show. It was in charge, and it was taking me for a ride, and it was calling all the shots, and I didn't know it. I just didn't know. I was in such delusion. It made all of my choices of my friends, like where I lived, what I did, and I was causing a lot of pain, and so I went to Florida to run away, and I was like 17 or something, went to school down there, and similar to Megan, like I had like a 3.0 and was at University of Tampa, and it was like a pool and everyone's partying, and I was like loving school, and I was getting drunk every night, and I was miserable. I was so miserable, but like I was in the happiest place ever, and it didn't make sense. And I was like best friends with another miserable girl, and we would just like smoke cigarettes and be like, Florida, and like get so wasted and just be like, Florida. Even though it was beautiful, I was so unhappy, and so I was like, let me transfer. And the story of my life is like try to change something to like, and it just doesn't work. So then I leave and I get a DUI when I'm back home. And that was really, really bad. I had been at this girl's house that I shouldn't have been at with some like guy that we all called an uncle who's creepy, who provides all the alcohol for free, and I don't know what was happening there. He's not related to any of us. And he was always around. But But like, alcohol was running my life and calling the shots. And they were begging me not to drive that day. And I felt totally fine. I was totally fine. In my mind, I was sober as ever. And then, like, I don't remember anything except me in a jail cell, like, freaking out. And I'm screaming at people. And I, you know, they wrote a report how I should never get my license back. And I was, like, driving all over the road. And I truly felt fine when I was leaving. And it's really strange. So that caused a lot of things in my life, one of which is sobriety, eventually, which is kind of cool. God always, like, had a plan, I suppose, or was there. So I didn't die to kill anyone, that's a miracle, and I definitely didn't get sober for another 6 years, but it all was leading there. So I went to UNH, and I did everything based on how do I get alcohol, you know, without a license. And so I, like, got placed in a Christian dorm when I was not religious and I was a raging alcoholic. And these people were, like, sober. So these are all, like, the hands of God. And they would, like, literally drag me inside and I'd be blacked out. And, you know, literally the hands of God. And so then I got out of that dorm quickly. And I moved off campus to fix everything. And that's stupid. I didn't have a license or anything. And so I lived with people that, like, I hung out with people that weren't in college who were alcoholics. One of them said he was my sponsor, and we read the big book together drinking. and another, like, supposed hand of God or whatever, but he lived across the hall, and he was another uncle. Like, alcohol, like, made me, like, choose to hang out with this person because they provided alcohol, you know? It's really, really, really sad. I can laugh about it now, but it was really awful. Honestly, I don't remember, like, that specific year. If you told me, like, to remember one piece of it, I remember, like, two pieces of it. Because every single day, I was passing out and blacking out. And I ate ramen noodles only. My face was huge. I just remember my sister, like, seeing me, like, once a year and being like, can you stop eating ramen noodles? And she, I was like, why? She just, like, has really bad alcohol. But, like, I had a much bigger problem. I just have to be honest, I love ramen right now. I love ramen so much. Okay, so, there's the only thing I could afford, and I was running from the landlord, like, every day. I wasn't paying rent. This was, like, such a bad year. This was during the, and I'll turn to sobriety because we're at half. This was the year of the financial crisis, you know, that big one. I don't know, it was, like, 2008 or something. my parents, like, lost everything because they were in, like, the mortgage industry. And they lost their house and their other house and their car. And my dad was having alcoholism, and my mom, you know, all this stuff. And my dad's having heart disease, and he had to get, like, a quadruple bypass of his heart, so, like, the most extreme surgery. And I just remember, like, going to the hospital. I was throwing up outside the hospital. On the ground, in the parking lot, from, like, the amount I just threw up every day. Like, that was just standard, you know, just throw up from drinking, and being hungover and not understanding that I was, like, absolutely dying and detoxing every single day and withdrawing, because I thought, like, I just didn't know that I was, like, literally dying. So I also was starting to abuse study aids. I can't deal with the study aid. Really bad at the time, and so, you know, things were getting bad. And my point is, I was not there for my dad, and it's just so sad. And, you know, that's not what my life is today, which is so amazing. I get to be there for my family. And so They were going through that, and why I say that is I promised them I would pay rent a night off campus apartment, and I meant it. And I had so much fear sober, and like this is the transformation of like what the steps could do. Like I couldn't even breathe sober, and I, you know, I was like 18, 19. It's like easy to get for normal. I guess for some people, it's easy to get a job that like a retail job as a waitress. I couldn't even function. I was like shaking from fear to ask for a job application. So my mom got me a job, of course. And she got me a job at a bar because I don't know. And so I worked there and I like was a victim there. Like I was a victim in my whole story, but, and I got fired, I think. They didn't pay me. You know, I had no standards. So I worked there and they didn't pay me. Crazy. They're like, we're gonna pay you next week. Never paid. And I just kept going to work. So messed up. So anyways, I didn't pay my rent for that entire year. And I would call my parents and I would beg them for like, it was $500. That's insanely cheap. $500 for rent. I'm sorry, that's crazy. But I would beg them for like $20, you know, after maybe they pay me the rent and I feel so horrible, daily drinking, I would beg them for $20 and I would say on the phone, I can't eat, you know, and I would get the $20 into my bank account and I would go buy alcohol and cigarettes. And those were my only thing. And I know the exact store, my life was like this. There's a liquor store and the store where I bought beer and cigarettes and the bars and this creepy uncle. So it was the most guilty I've ever felt, you know, because they lost everything and I couldn't provide and I was lying to them about the money. And so I'm gonna fast forward to way later. It all stayed the same, I was a daily drinker. At the very end, I was living with a family member, and I was driving drunk again when I said I never would. I was like, oh, I'll drink every day, but I'm not gonna drive drunk because I really want my license. But I was driving drunk again because I could not make, I also got my family to get me another job. So once again, I could not do that by myself. So I went to this job. And like alcoholics are really strong people, to be honest. Like I would wake up so dead, like so, like I was absolutely physically dying from alcohol and drugs. And I would be shaking every single day, like shaking like insane. And I'd go to this job and I was probably the best person at that job. Like I'm not even kidding, probably because of all the alcohol. But, and then I would like chain smoke all day outside and throw up all day at the office, and then I would try to call this doctor, tell them I'm addicted to all the pills they're giving me, and then I would hang up as soon as the doctor would the nurse would give it to the doctor, because I couldn't imagine my life with or without it. And now it was like wine time, it was just wine, it was at the end. So I was at the end, so I went to this school party. I was no longer in school at Fairfield, and humiliated myself for 3 days, basically. You know how it goes. Is the most humiliating drinker ever. Doing all these things I don't agree with, that I feel so much shame around, humiliation, and causing my sister and my cousin, like for them to look at me with the way and the disgust that they looked at me. I've never seen it before because they were with me. And I just decided to go back to AA because I forgot to say that the DUI led me to AA the first time. And I didn't have a breath of sobriety, maybe one night, but it like, gave me this idea in my head that there might be a solution one day. So I decided, this thought came to me, go back to AA on my like 3 hours home from Connecticut. So I went and I didn't get sober right away. I saw Sarah at one of my first meetings at Lexington Young People, and I was done. So I had been so full of like willpower and I tried to manage and control my life and my drinking and my using from day one, every single day. I had tried everything, from switching to alcohol to having only two drinks to switching, you know, every single thing. Every day, say I'm quitting, writing notes to myself that I'm quitting, writing in my journal that I'm quitting, reading books that are titled How to Stop Drinking, going to alcohol therapists, going to DUI class, trying to manage it, buying only like six beers because that will be okay. I didn't understand the allergy. I thought, you know, I won't make a huge disaster if I have only six. So I tried everything. My point is I tried everything before I came to AA. And I was really, I clearly hadn't given up though yet because I still couldn't give up. And this weird thing about AA is it's the opposite of all of my instincts. You know, I got this amazing sponsor who would just tell me to like, stop thinking, give up, like surrender, stop trying. Like, what? Like, we need to try so hard, I'm gonna die. You know, what are you talking about? But it was truly like the opposite. Like how hard had I tried up until then? So hard. Like so everything possible. I would never come to AA if I hadn't. And that's what I was being told at all these meetings in like Brookline, all these places where, you know, I wasn't staying sober, but things were starting to change. Every single saying was like amazing to me, you know, one day at a time. I was like, oh, I need to write that down. I was just like having a spiritual experience at every meeting and then going to the store. It was truly like I couldn't give up that self-will. Couldn't give up. And I just remember so vividly going to Starbucks one day to meet my sponsor, and she always had a blue big book, and I was late, and I always tell the same story, so I'm sorry. I was very late, and then as soon as I walk in, I go and get a coffee, and like, she's sitting there, and then I'm like, I need to go smoke a cigarette, and so then like, I go and sit with her, and I'm like crying, probably, and she's just like, you're so selfish. She just like said how selfish I was, and I've never been so hurt in my life. No one's ever like called me out for my bullshit ever. There I go. It's done. And so she called me out so hard, and then I just was like, okay. So I read ahead. So I read like 50 chapters ahead of her suggestion. Did all of them. I'm sure people understand this if you sponsor. And did all these things that were my plan. I was like, I did all the steps like when we were apart the past 2 days, and like. Probably on drugs too. And she just like, so much silence. It was like, when are you ever gonna give up? And it was a real spiritual experience for me because I even took my self-will into AA and just went so hard and I couldn't get sober. And it was so hard for me to let go. I let go, you know, eventually I had another bottom and I had a spiritual experience with this God. My sponsor says that her job is to put my hand in the hand of a higher power, and she did that, and she like fired me, and I was all alone because she just couldn't help me anymore, and I had this power that she introduced me to. And what's so cool about like my life today versus before is like coming here. I was thinking about like, you know, don't fear, you have God. You know, God's always with me. God is my strength. Like, I didn't have any of that before. I had nothing to rely on other than alcohol was my higher power and drugs. And so now I rely on this power. And so she introduced me to that power. That, you know, what she did and what AA did was really introduce me to a power, higher power, that was like super powerful. And kept, like, I've never experienced something so strong in my life than this disease, where I was drinking and using against my own will and it wanted me dead. And this power overcame it. And I was unable to finish my drink for the first time in my life, and I've never had one since, or a cigarette or a drug that wasn't prescribed to me in, you know, safe way. And that was a miracle, because I've never not made a plan to quit and picked up again every single time. And there was no plan involved. It was removed. I was separated. I was truly separated from this power. And that's why I said, it's sad to me because I can't give that to anybody. I just can share my experience. And so that happened. And, you know, this other thing that is the most important thing that AA has given me is, you know, I did the steps. We only have 1 minute left, so we can't talk about that. But the second thing that this program has given me that's the most important besides God is service. And so from the beginning, because all that stuff's really important for emotional sobriety, like in between 1 and 12, but service, from day one, I was like brought to the detoxes and brought to all these places to share my experience, strength, and hope. And that has carried all along, all the way. Like this, you know, in my recovery right now, I go to like at least 3 or 4 commitments a month or more, you know, to detoxes, to McLean, to wherever, other meetings, and that gives me life. It truly gives me life. And I just remember her bringing me to this, you know, I was brand new, and she brought me to this person, a hotel room, and this girl was my sponsee's sister. I don't know if I had a month or 3 months or 2 days, but she was my sponsee's sister, but she was dying of alcoholism, and her hair was matted to the back of the hotel bed. There was cigarettes everywhere, there was vodka everywhere, and I just woke up to reality. You can't have any problems after seeing that, you know? And that's the thing about 12-step work, is like, you leave and you're like, oh, my life's really good, you know? And so she told her story, we sat next to the bed, told her story, then she looked at me saying, now tell yours. And like, I finally had a purpose. I had a story to tell. And like, my nightmare wasn't for nothing. And it was easy to tell, you know, what my drinking looked like. And it's been like that ever since, is how can I share my experience, strength, and hope. And so the gifts, says thanks. The last thing I'll say is the greatest gift that this program has given me is my parents and my sister can sleep at night and they are at total peace. And that's something you can't repay AA for. So that's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Laura. Now we have, can Angelica come up for festivities? Hi, I'm Mike, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Mike.
Here at Beacon, we do fellowship after the meeting. Tonight we will be going to Bar Taco. If you want to attend, please see me after the meeting. The Beacon group has 3 monthly commitments, the Shiloh House every second Tuesday of the month in person from 7 to 8 p.m. The next one is November 14th. Mickey will be chairing. I don't think she's, oh yeah, right back there. And Hillside Detox is the first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m., which is December 7th, and the third Sunday of the month at 11 a.m., which is November 19th. Danny M. will be chairing. Please see anyone with their hand raised if you want to join. And registration is now open for the 12th Annual Freedom Trail Conference at MIT, January 26th to 28th. The second planning meeting was tonight, and the next one will be Wednesday, December 6th at 6:30 p.m. before the regular meeting. And we need your help. If you have questions or want to get involved, please see Katie K, Kelsey B, or Danny M with their hands raised after the meeting, and they can give you a business card to sign up.
Hello, my name is Angelica. I'm an alcoholic.
Angelica.
The group inventory will be Sunday, November 19th from 3 to 6 here at Temple Beth Zion. This is a way to go over how we did as a group this past year, and it's a great way to get involved. Please see anyone with their hands raised if you have any questions. Also, the group anniversary night will be Wednesday, November 29th at 6:30 p.m. right here, again, at Temple Beth Zion. We'll be having a pizza party, kosher, of course, and a special speaker, Stacy S. From New York. So please see Katie K. if you're able to help set up around 6 p.m. Thank you, guys.
Big breaking for me. Hey everyone, Sarah Alcoholic.
Hey Sarah.
A little taller. So I'm the DCM for District 14. We will be having a holiday alcohol that will be Christmas Eve through Christmas Day. But we have to have a chair. So if you are interested in chairing the alcohol, let me know. District 12 and 13 have a chair so you won't be doing it alone. And it's just like an awesome opportunity to be of service. I've done alcohol for 2 years now. I wish I could be doing it. I can't. So if you're interested in doing it and you want to be, if you're here around, or maybe you want to escape your family, I don't know, let me know. I'm happy to chat with you about it. And it should be a good time. Thanks.
And for chips, we have Zubin and Kelsey.
Hi, my name is Zubin. I'm an alcoholic.
Aye.
Sponsorship is a cornerstone of AA's 12-step recovery program. If you are new to AA or our group and you do not have a sponsor, we strongly suggest that you get one. Will anyone who is willing to speak to people about AA or sponsorship, please raise your hands. Thank you. AA anniversaries are celebrated on the last Wednesday of each month. This is an opportunity for members to come and express their gratitude for a minute or so. We suggest that all celebrants donate $1 per year sobriety to be sent to GSO, and of course, excellent cake will be served. To promote unity and enhance sobriety, Beacon Group organizes anniversary watches. This is an opportunity for Beacon Group members on their 364th day of sobriety to sit with their sponsor and friends beginning at 9:30 p.m. to watch their first year of sobriety be ushered in. Anniversary watches take place at the Brighton IHOP at 1850 Soldiers Field Road. If you are about to celebrate an anniversary, please see our anniversary chair, Sarah, after the meeting. Thank you all for coming.
And now for those who care to join in the Lord's Prayer.
Pirates